Okay, welcome to the Jacksonville Ethics Commission meeting, and we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America,
and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. So, good to be back here after, I guess it was our March meeting. It was the last one. And Carla, why don't you start us off with a thought of the day?
I had a hard time finding a thought of the day. I started looking at quotes, and quotes kept popping up, like quotes that are currently popping up everywhere, and they were all Trump quotes. And I got pulled into listening to all of this. I thought, oh my God, he couldn't have possibly said that. And so it was hard for me to come up with one, but I did. History shows that where ethics and economics come in conflict, victory is always with economics. Vested interests have never been known to have willingly divested themselves unless there was sufficient force to compel them.
Might have to have you read that again, or I'll just look at it again.
Yeah, here, I'll autograph it.
Translate it as a Trump quote. We're going to have huge ethics. They're going to be the best ethics ever.
I love ethics.
Give that to Joe. That is
huge. I love it. All right. Excellent.
I had some really great ones from Trump. I had some great ones I could have brought from Trump, but I thought, no.
He's probably talking ethics at some point.
Well, I knew there was a reason I was really missing you guys, and as I look at the minutes, it's because I was absent in March, so it's been 2 months since I've been here. So as we bring up the minutes for approval, anyone who was here who has any comments? Otherwise, someone can propose a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the minute.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any comments? All right, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right, the minutes are approved. Okay, so looks like we're going to start off with our ECHO office report. Ms. Miller.
I just wanted to mention that Ioana, our member, her father died about 10, 12 days ago, and then her mother got in the hospital right afterwards. So I'm telling you this because maybe if you all would send her a little email or something and tell her we're all thinking about her. I told her we were, but she'd probably love to hear from the group, and she's not here today because of that, but she's going under a lot of stress right now. So I'll just send you an email, and you can communicate with her. That's not a sunshine issue, you know, so just don't say, and let me tell you what happened today at the meeting. The second thing I just wanted to tell you briefly is that there was a conference down in Orlando of the Ethics and Compliance Institute, and this is one of the main research-based ethics organizations in the country, mainly for corporate America. There aren't too many. There was actually no cities represented, but really cutting-edge research, especially focused on training, ethics training. And so Kirby and I both wanted to go. Kirby wanted to go so badly, she said she'd pay her own way. And I said, let me see. We don't have any money in the budget. So I went to the city council president, and I said, we're going to be doing training for the city council in June. Could you give us some money from city council? And he okayed that, so Kirby and I could both go. And we spent Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday being immersed with really the best corporate ideas on ethics. And like one of the things that I got, this is from a corporation on, this is, can you imagine like if we had a guidebook, an ethics guidebook, and a code of conduct with everything that we're trying to show with our employees all in plain English like this, you know, would be really good to work on something like that. So we got piles of things to bring home and hopefully copy. And then there was a whole day seminar on strategies to teach employees how to speak up. And that's from Mary Gentile's Giving Voice to Values. And a lot of corporations are, like Lockheed Martin, for instance, they're putting in huge programs, assuming that people do know what the right thing is. They just don't say anything about it. And so that's sort of a corporate thrust right now. Like, how do you get people to have the courage to say something and say it in a tactful enough way that you can actually affect a change? And so that was a whole day seminar on that, and really very helpful. And then we had the trainer from the Disney Institute come and talk about their culture at Disney. And that was good. And he talked about how do you develop a culture where everybody is out there trying to, they know what the purpose of the organization is, to make people happy at Disney. That's not necessarily our purpose in the ethics office, but everybody knows what that purpose is, and they do incredible things. And so Kirby and I were both taking like verbatim notes on everything, you know, all the tips that he was giving on how do you develop that culture where you don't have to hit people with the rules all the time, because they're so tied into the purpose of the organization. They wouldn't think of doing something that was contrary to the purpose. And a lot of training sessions. It's really a little overwhelming to see what corporate America is doing when they have millions to develop their training programs, and they have these beautiful graphics. And they said, well, we had six consulting companies work with us on this product, you know, one on generational differences and one on graphics and one on computers. And I think, okay, it's really what you can do to impinge upon people. I think you can do it with a lot less in resources. You know, it's really the heart that you're trying to communicate. You don't need to have really fancy graphics. But so we learned a lot with that. And then the last speaker that we had, we got a book. The first 100 people got his book, Jonah Berger, on Contagious. And it's Why Things Catch On. And so Kirby and I were both lucky enough to get the books. We were a little aggressive on lining up and getting the books. Or maybe I was. Yeah. And so we'll go through that book and maybe summarize some of those ideas. But, obviously you want to make the idea of ethics and what we're trying to do with our program contagious. And so that's, you know, like he was talking about, how do you make ethics programs contagious anyhow. So that's sort of a summary of what we learned. And in June, the first week of June, I've been invited to attend a one-day conference in New York. And it's the top behavioral research people on behavioral ethics from MIT, Harvard, and NYU's Stern School of Business. And there's 35 people that have been invited, and I'm the only person from a government entity that is going to that. And these are people that are just doing research on whole new ways of looking at how do you imbue ethics into a culture. So I'm just, you know, and I thought, oh, we have zero in our budget to do this. And it was like $600 just to fly up there and have a hotel for the night. And the city council president again came through. And so, I can go to that conference. I would have gone anyhow. I would have paid for it myself, but happy to, you know, have the support of city council. That's the report, and lots of activity in the office as things happen on everything. You're getting the emails, so I won't go over all the emails, but it's been busy.
Yeah, excellent.
And Kirby has a few things to say about the conference. You said you wanted to say some things. No, you don't?
No. No, I just said I was happy to talk about it if you wanted me to. So there were two main themes at the conference in addition to the topics Carl has already covered. One was storytelling, the power of storytelling, and how basically every time you open your mouth to communicate, you're telling stories. So that was the first session that I went to, and there was a moderator and a facilitator from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and that's all he does. And he got into that business because he fell asleep as an engineering grad student in a seminar, and he was snoring, and he caught the ire of everyone in the audience as he was snoring during the presentation. And he was so mad that they put him to sleep that he parlayed it into a career into effective storytelling. So that was really interesting. And the second one was leveraging relationships internally and externally to promote the ethics program and to promote your message. So they talked about finding partners and other departments in your organization, such as IT or human resources and other departments or entities that may be doing training, so you can hook onto their training or get your message out and that kind of thing. So we'll be working to try to incorporate some of those ideas as well.
Thanks. Excellent. right. Thank you. And any general counsel office report?
No report. Thank you.
All right. Okay. So next we've got committee reports. And let's start off with complaints.
Okay. I think that's my ball at this point. We had an opportunity. I met with both Carla and Kirby as it relates to the ethics complaint committee. Our committee itself has not met, and one of the things we wanted to discuss were the parameters under which we would meet, and that would be, I think, we settled on with meet those members of the committee when we have an actual complaint that gets submitted. And we talked about the complaint submission process, that we're going to have the complaint forms have been revised. They're available online for the public, but they've been revised. We also added more. Talked about adding a component of the complaint form where people will give them the process of where they go through the complaint, the complaints through. I know also under the complaints committee, we're going to have, I believe Samantha is going to be here. She's going to have a presentation as it relates to the complaints process out of Palm Beach, which I think we can learn a lot from. So at this point, she knows more about that than I do at this point, so I'm going to yield.
And I just wanted to give you a little intro. I thought it would be of use, and we discussed this in our meeting, to take a look at what Palm Beach County and Miami and Broward and the State Ethics Commission are doing. If you take a look at the number of complaints that they're processing, you think, well, why aren't we processing 20 complaints a month, and what's going on? And so dissecting that and figuring out what laws are they relying upon, what kind of cases do they have, really kind of eyeballing it, will give us some insight. Because I don't think, even though most of us are lawyers, that having laws to punish people is always the best solution for something. I mean, there can be some other solutions. So, it's just sort of an introductory thing to analyze what other groups are doing and then see if we want to do the same, something different, or whatever. And so luckily, Samantha has volunteered to help us in City Council. She's interning with City Council, and, she came to one of our last meetings. And they are kind enough to loan her to us to help us do this research. And I've been really impressed with her work so far, and she has a little presentation to show you about what Palm Beach County is doing, so we can kind of think with it. Samantha. Okay. The PowerPoint is in your book, so you don't have to take copious notes on it. Samantha, it's all yours.
Okay. Well, I'll try not to put y'all to sleep, but if you do, you can become professional storytellers.
You're a good listener.
Okay, so an overview. From 2010 to 2013, there were a total of 56 cases. 41 of them were dismissed, and then 8 of them was dismissed with a letter of instruction, and that's just saying that the respondent did, in fact, violate the code of ethics, but they weren't, they didn't have to, basically, they just got a letter of instructions. And then there was negotiated settlements. This just meant that there was probable cause and that they just didn't want to go to a final hearing. So of the dismissed cases, you had 56% of them were legally insufficient. 27 were lack of probable cause, 5% outside of jurisdiction, and 12% prior to code of ethics, which was, I believe, June 2010. So breaking that down further, in 2010, there were 8 total cases. 6 of them were dismissed, 2 dismissed with letter of instructions. In 2011, there were 17 total cases, 14 dismissed, 3 negotiation settlements, and letter of reprimand. And then 2012, there were 9 dismissed, 5 dismissed with letter of instruction, 1 negotiated settlement, letter of reprimand, and a payment of a fine, and then just 1 negotiated settlement. And I believe it was in 2013, hold on. Yes, in 2013, 15 total cases, 12 dismissed, 1 dismissed with a letter of instruction, 1 negotiated settlement and letter of instruction, and then another negotiated settlement, letter of instruction, and payment of a fine. So Palm Beach County, their main goal is just to educate, not to really make it to where if you're guilty, you have to pay or you have to do anything. They just want to educate. So here are some of the examples of the actual cases. C-10-006, it alleged that the respondent knowingly accepted a gift in excess of $100 from a principal or employer of a lobbyist. And he, in fact, received a gift of $400. And so every case, there is an executive session, and they last usually 5 minutes. If it's being dismissed, they can quickly decide. But in this case, it went on to a probable cause meeting, which lasted 2 hours and 40 minutes. And then they decided to just dismiss with a letter of instruction because they believed that it wasn't intentional or it was inadvertent. And then in 2011, case 27, a chairman on the equestrian board was accused of misusing public office by having one of his clients, he was helping them get money for one of their projects, and then he ultimately abstained from voting, but he failed to disclose the voting conflict. That probable cause hearing was an hour and 40 minutes, and they reached a negotiated settlement, and he had to pay a fine. And then 2012, case 16, much like the first case, the respondent knowingly accepted a gift in excess of $100 from a principal employer of a lobbyist. And this case lasted an hour and 32 minutes, but was dismissed with a letter of instruction, again, because they believed it was inadvertent, and also because he voluntarily agreed to give back the gift. And finally, in 2013, there was the lobbyist did not register as a lobbyist, and so the probable cause hearing was an hour, and there was a negotiated settlement and letter of instruction. Now, I did not go through and see how many of the cases were filed by a citizen or a public official or anything like that, but it did mostly look like it was citizens that were filing the cases. And I think that the reason a lot of them were legally insufficient is that they just didn't understand what would be a legally sufficient cause. And that's that. Okay.
Could you put together a spreadsheet of all of these? Do we have the spreadsheet around here?
Here is a copy. The print is a bit small, but I believe Kirby is going.
Yeah, Samantha has done a 16-page spreadsheet with all the details on all the different cases. This is just a summary of it, and so we can email that to you. Yes, it's miniature. Only young people can read this. We need jumbo letters, Samantha. But it's big. It's big if we email it. It's big if. Yeah, oh, let me see. Okay, I'm the real test here. I'm the oldest in the group. Okay, I can read it with my glasses. Okay, so we'll email it to everybody, and you can see the kinds of cases. So thank you, Samantha. I'll just pass this around, and we'll email it to everybody.
Yeah. I was just condensing it onto one sheet, so you wouldn't have multiple.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Thank you very much.
All right, anything else on complaints?
Oh, that's everything.
That was great, thank you. All right, let's turn my page. I forgot where we had.
I just want to make a comment on the taking a look at that. There's they have a staff of 5 down there, and when you analyze all their cases in the last couple of years, I think they've had a lot of activity moving in and out in folders, but I think almost everything's been dismissed. So I wonder about the efficacy of doing something like that. So we'll see. We're moving to Miami. We'll see what Miami is up to. But I want to see if they're actually doing something that impacts and makes a difference. So maybe you guys, when you take a look at all these cases and you see what they've been up to there, it'll give you some insight on, do we want to spend our time with that? Because if something comes in and there's no jurisdiction, since our program has not been funded hugely, I mean, we don't have a staff of 5, but if something comes in, there's no jurisdiction, I usually just tell the person there's no jurisdiction. I cut to the chase. I don't have time for like a huge thing to end up disappointing the citizen, ultimately, that there was no jurisdiction. That will help us, to figure out, how we proceed.
How did Palm Beach take their complaints? Did they have a telephone hotline? Did they have a written complaint procedure? Do they come in person? Do we know
all
that?
Of it?
All of that.
All of it, yeah.
I think what Colin was saying, we found is that Palm Beach was, they're taking in, all of the complaints, processing them through, and having formalized, as you can see.
Right, everything.
And then even ones that end up, for example, not having jurisdiction, not being a violation of their, analogous ethics code, then they reach that conclusion. Whereas perhaps, what we might do is more front end on that. If it's not within the ambit of the Ethics Commission, we move that out and get the citizen to where they need to be to get their resolution if it's not under our jurisdiction. So we're looking at, different aspects of looking at the complaint process.
And one of the things we did when Richard was up in our office is we showed him the spreadsheet that Kirby and I keep of all the stuff coming in. And you can see someone calling and saying their apartment complex kicked them out and they think that this is unethical. We have who calls, whether it's a citizen, what they're complaining about, and where it goes. And so you see that there's a lot of ethics complaints. There's a lot of stuff going on. But what do we need to filter into this group? At what level do we take it in and do something with it? And that's the inquiry. And
what do you tell the person who calls about their landlord? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, we tell them, landlord situations. We tell them we have no jurisdiction over landlord-tenant situations, and we usually get them either to legal aid or, we try to find out the type of problem, get them to someone that can help them. We try to give them – we don't just say, I'm sorry, we can't help you. Click. Well, I mean, we do try to find – yeah. I'm
wondering what – because next thing you know, you take up half your day researching where they should properly call.
Yeah, no, we have pat answers, and almost all of them fall into the category of 630 City because 630 City has a staff of about 30 people in a round-the-clock call center, and they are trained to channel people all over the place. And so we don't spend more than, here's the thing. If a citizen calls, you could say, I'm sorry, we don't have jurisdiction, 60 City and hang up. Or you could just spend a minute or two talking to them about the function of the office and add a little PR to the whole thing about what we do and give them a good impression of the office. But if it's more than 5 minutes, I start to feel antsy about it, because it's a waste of our resources, of which we don't have many, but it's, I can't be, and it's hard as a lawyer to not get into trying to help solve their problem. I'm sorry, I can't help you, is a hard thing to say to people. Or we could start referring it to Ethics Commission members to help with it. We don't get too many people like that, and every once in a while we get someone that clearly has a disturbed life and they just need someone to talk to. But we don't have time to do that, and that's sad because they do need some help. Send them to 630 City.
All right, thank you. Okay, let's move to internal operations.
Thank you. Kirby and Carl and I met really for a pre-planning meeting, I would call it. And we decided that it would be best if the Internal Operations Committee takes up our plan of our goals for the next couple years and does a first pass for the committees and the committee chairs for them to challenge themselves as well. But to refresh that, it hasn't really been refreshed since we've got a new Inspector General's office. So there will likely be some changes around that. We've also had some legislative changes, nothing major, but it needs some refreshing, and we haven't really found a way to do that. So we thought the Internal Ops Committee could take a stab at that. So we'll do that with the intent of having revisions back out to the subcommittees by, October, November-ish. And ideally, the committees can have a good plan to work on the end of this year, but really the beginning of next year. And that dovetails nicely with, I let Carla know that this would need to be my last year, which I mean, I'll leave a year early. Love the work on the commission, wish I could continue. I'm just having trouble juggling everything that I have right now. So I'm actually stepping down from this board and another board that I'm on. And I think that'll maybe give me an hour of rest here or there, which I honestly just don't have right now. So it has nothing to do with the commission's work, except to say that Dave Ryback has a similar skill set and background that I do. So he's a fantastic guy to hand the baton off to so that he can carry on and make sure that as a full commission, we achieve the overall mission, which is to enhance the ethics and compliance culture of the full city, but also to build citizen trust. There's no finish line there. You're never done. You always work at it. And so to make sure that we are continuously building, it's important for that planning to go on. And I think Dave's a great guy to take that on as part of the internal ops committee and that we can keep all that moving.
Excellent.
So that was an update and an announcement. Sorry. The end of the year.
We could give up running.
Could give up running, yes, and die a slow death with my heart failing.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Let's get to the legislative committee.
So I had the pleasure of meeting with Ms. Miller earlier today, and I think we made some good progress. We are in the process of marshaling some of the limited resources that we have, including some of the good work by Ms. Lane. Thank you very much. In an effort to carrying on the theme of refreshment, refresh certain portions of our code that, to use a good word, that Ms. Miller pulled out today, has a significant amount of waste and detritus that needs to be tightened up so that it can be in a format that folks can understand and use and not get a little bit sideways of what the purpose of the code is. And we're also looking at alternative means to create the culture that we're looking for in city government without relying so heavily on the ultimate penalty, but rather putting some of the good research that Ms. Miller has had the opportunity to dive headfirst into in all of her different training sessions and educational visits to her distinguished universities across the country, particularly one in Boston, or Cambridge, rather. So that we can kind of craft a vision for the city's ethics code that doesn't rely so heavily on a procedure that could just result in 90% of the complaints being dismissed with having no purpose other than to waste everybody's time in following a set just procedure to nothing happening. So we're looking for ways to move the motivation at an early stage to one of reporting and one of understanding through some of the legislation, and then to when it gets to the stage of complaint, then you have at the back end the appropriate punishment that's already there, the limited amount that we have. So that's what we're working towards. And we kind of have a framework of how we're going to proceed, starting with some caucuses, just amongst folks that have already looked at the issue and already kind of have some opinions as to where what direction it should go in, and then we're going to bring the committee together and work on some language.
Good. Yeah, I'd say that's certainly a worthy goal, so appreciate you taking
see,
that.
See how
yeah.
it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and just, you know, my experience in being on the commission is, you know, all of these areas are significant because you're not quite sure what's going to drive the business of the commission. You know, it certainly can be complaints that, you know, are controversial and can be complex. I can tell you I've really appreciated the work Tom's done over the years in planning and kind of keeping us ahead of the game. And I think for me, just because of my background, the legislative stuff is fascinating and energizing. And so I appreciate the work. All right, I know we don't have Ms. Allen here. I'm not sure, John, if you want to speak to the open government. Or okay.
I'll speak for Ioana. She's been very active in the city council texting subcommittee that the council president put together. She's attended all the meetings, and I sent you the minutes where she just said, oh, okay, let me tell you what the Ethics Commission thinks. And she just did a great job at that. So she's been very much involved in that process, and that's probably what she would report on. And we have another meeting next Wednesday, and then that subcommittee is going to be coming out with its final recommendations. But they definitely have worked in the Ethics Commission's opinions, because Ioana, even right after her father's funeral, took the time to go and participate in that meeting last Wednesday, you know, on behalf of the Ethics Commission. So that's her report.
Thanks. Okay, that's good stuff. So we'll move on to new business. I know that an email went around about the resignation of our Inspector General, and it was a pretty brief resignation letter, personal reasons. But I'll just give you a little bit of insight that I have, and then, Ms. Miller, you'll probably have more. There's a committee of folks that essentially hired the IG, and that committee has continued because there's evaluation processes that have to continue for the IG. And that committee, which I'm the representative, and I know Tom's gone to a meeting as well, meets this Monday. Obviously, there's not going to be an evaluation anymore, but it's really, I think, going to be a pre-meeting on a search committee. So that's where we are. I'll know more after Monday. One of the things I think that's going to be recommended is, and you'll appreciate this, is having a good evaluation form of the IG, so that both he and she know what the expectations are, and the committee does. And I think that is important to do, and it's important to have that evaluation form probably part of the hiring process, so they see it on the front end. And particularly if you're coming from a different background, you know, Mr. Klein was coming from a federal agency, coming to a city government, you know, different dynamics, and it's important, I think, to see in advance kind of what you're getting into, how you're going to be evaluated, you know, so everybody's, you know, on the same plane. So anyway, anything you want to say to that process?
Well, I would. Tom was actually at that meeting, so he might have some input on how that went.
Sure, from a meeting perspective, Mr. Klein called the meeting and gave his six-month update. Lots of different slides, but the main movement that we could tell was some recent hiring. So he's filled out some positions. On some of the metrics that he reported, it was unclear, and there were some questions about how much of that is work that had been done previously and how much of it was new work. Has there been, there were some identified potential savings? Has there been follow-up on that? And there were some questions without some real answers, unfortunately. As part of the process in creating an evaluation, I think the city has hired Ms. Steckler to help with that, correct? That's what the committee talked about. I didn't know if that came to fruition or not. But so Ms. Steckler will come back and will assist that group, which is responsible for hiring and retaining and reviewing the Inspector General, to help them really flesh out that review process. Again, when somebody's going to be reviewed, it's appropriate for them to know what the key things that they should focus on are, and that wasn't spelled out previously. So I understand she'll be helping with that, and also will be helping with searching for a new Inspector General.
Right. So Cheryl has been very dedicated to get the whole thing up and running in 2014, and to come back and help us at this stage. And I've seen the criteria for the selection of the new IG, and I started, as lawyers do, crossing through and adding things, and it still needs work. So we need to make sure we get it right this time. And I think probably the biggest thing that I saw the difference in some of the criteria was leadership criteria, because the IG has to be someone that can go out and work with all the different agencies in our consolidated government. And we've got a lot of people that you have to interact with, and not that they're going to be thrilled with oversight I think that people always have like a little resistance to someone coming in. But we had the issue with JEA that you read about in the paper that I sent to you, where JEA said, no, we're not going to have the inspector general come in. We need someone that works around that kind of thing and gets the people in and sits down and talks to people. And on that point with the JEA, that got worked out pretty quickly. They are now working with the IG's office and handing over documents. And Councilmember Crescenbeny has just sponsored legislation that Kirby and I worked on with General Counsel's office. And this ordinance handles the objection that JEA had on the jurisdiction. Because clearly the referendum last year said the IG has jurisdiction over the independent authorities, the entire consolidated city. Earlier we had that section of the law that says that there has to be a memorandum of understanding, but you can't have the IG get a complaint like a criminal complaint and then they go to say to one of the independent authorities, hi, we have a criminal complaint, can we sit down and kind of negotiate if we can come in and talk to you about it? I mean, that's not going to work. So Councilmember Crescenbeny just filed this legislation a few days ago, and everywhere where it says that the duties are to handle the city's resources, it says the entire consolidated government of Jacksonville. So it just makes it very clear that we're not just talking about the executive branch, that it is like the citizens voted for it. It's the entire consolidated city of Jacksonville. So that legislation is in the hopper and going through.
Good. All right, any questions on that? All right, I see here Special Counsel Committee on Electronic Communications.
That's the one I told you about with Ioana, that she's doing a really good job on.
Oh, I didn't realize it had a formal name.
Apparently it does, yeah.
Excellent.
It's a formal name.
All right. You know, usually when you have names that long, it's supposed to spell a really cool acronym. And that one,
SECIC.
Really cool
action. I'll tell you, there's one problem with what they're doing. I don't know if the Ethics Commission wants to speak to it or not, but right now they're making a recommendation that every city council president every year will re-examine all the electronic communication policies and issue the policy for that year. So it forces, not forces is a bad word, but it puts it on the table every year to keep up with any changes that place, and they will then issue a policy for that year for city council on the use of text messaging and any other things that get invented in the next couple years. So that's good, but it only applies to city council. And one of the things that we spoke in favor of at the first meeting is that it, since they have the power in Chapter 602 to legislate for the entire consolidated city of Jacksonville, that they do so with this, that why not every independent authority also have to come up with a policy on text messaging and force them to do that. So I don't know what your feeling is on that. I mean, I think they just want to handle their own shop first, and we can talk to the independent authorities separately about that. But anyhow, we tried to get it to be more expansive, and Ioana argued valiantly in favor of that. But it is the policy they're coming up with will just be limited to city council.
I think we should be on top of that. I don't even think they're going to come out with a strong policy for themselves. I mean, it doesn't seem that way. I know Ioana was pretty vocal in that.
But she was 90 degrees from what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes.
It won't be a popular opinion, but I think everybody on this commission felt that it was necessary that they have some rule, and I don't think they're willing to do anything.
Well, it's interesting, and I would say that if any member of the commission wants to come next Wednesday at 9 o'clock, you know, and actually see that, and I could introduce the members of the Ethics Commission that are there, even if you didn't want to say anything, the fact that two or three people would come and stand up and say, listen, you know, this is an important issue to us. I was not at last Wednesday's meeting because Kirby and I were coming back from the conference, but what I picked up in the minutes is, look, we're adults. We can handle this on our own. We don't need to have a lot of written policies on this. There's always that tension, you know, in ethics. Like, we're adults, we can handle this whole thing. No, you're not. We have to give you a lot of rules because you've messed up. You know, no, we're adults. I mean, it just goes back like that. But I think that it will be a very general framework is what we're looking at for their resolution. But they will put it in a resolution. Actually, the resolution that they're going to have City Council vote on will only be that the City Council president has to come up with a policy. The City Council president has to come up with a policy once a year. So then it could change from year to year depending upon the council president. If you've got someone that really believes in, you know, whatever their personal viewpoint is, it's going to change every year with the new president. So if you feel strongly about it, I would suggest that we come next Wednesday, and show a, you know, that people are there and that, and we'll see, you know, I mean, it could be that the lessons learned from last fall will make enough of an impact that there won't be a problem in the future. I mean, I'm always optimistic and hopeful and that we do more training and that that will handle it, maybe.
What's the current, refresh my memory, what's the current policy that Councilman Anderson has set forth? Isn't it banning it completely during council meetings?
Well, that was his first thing, like no cell phones on. Yeah that was not popular. And then he issued a policy just saying that you don't respond to anything. There's a like three paragraphs. You don't respond. I mean, you can still get them because you can't prevent people from sending you stuff, but you don't respond. And what was the other part of it, Kirby?
It's limited, though, to lobbyists and vendors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course, because it's a public record. Yeah.
Okay. So kind of the same policy regarding emails.
Right.
And is there a disclosure provision at the meeting where you have to?
No, that was Bill Gulliford's bill. They didn't like that. Yeah, you had to disclose the content. Of course, you know, the more you build in things like that where they have to disclose and they have to copy it and they have to, you know, then the complexity of it starts catching people in unintentional violations. And
so they don't have to automatically disclose it as a public record to a certain office from the city?
No.
So if Joe Smith wants to request Councilman Anderson's text messages regarding any city business in the they go and grab Councilman Anderson's cell phone and download it?
He has to. He has to download it, and he has to retain it.
He also has the ability to redact it, too. So he has those are whatever he deems to be personal, like Angela Corey was saying. Those are transitory text messages, so they get
To decide.
First shot. Yeah, they have first shot.
Well, the only problem with that is that there was a person on the other end of that text, and if you start redacting and eliminating things, you have to hope that the other person eliminated the same stuff. Otherwise, there's evidence that you defrauded someone on a public records request. You know what I mean? That's what happened in the case last fall. I don't know where my text messages are. Well, someone else had them, you know, and they start giving them out. Oh, I don't have any. No one ever texted me. Oh, yeah, well, he turned them over. So you have to have the other person in on that. If you're going to redact,
well, you would hope.
You would hope.
So if they're in collusion and they're doing something they're not supposed to be doing anyway, which has been all in the papers, and now that we're going to ask for them, I mean, we would hope, we would expect, but we would expect too that the city council wouldn't be sitting in their chair during the meeting doing this. This is exactly what they're doing. I mean, that's first of all, it's rude. Second of all. I mean, can't they excuse themselves to the green room or the restroom or somewhere instead of in front of everybody and it's televised? Or, I mean, that just doesn't make good common sense to me. You know?
Yeah, well, we can't legislate common sense, but too bad. But
I mean, then reveal it all. If you're going to do that, then expect what you expect.
Well, they even discussed it was interesting because there's companies that will come in, and I can give them my phone number. Right. And they'll back up all your text messages, and then you can do searches, you know, for every time you had the word lobbyist or whatever, and they'll back it up. But they opted to not do that But today I had a discussion with the city council president, and he said, well, that's a good idea. I don't want to have to worry about backing them up. What if I drop my phone in a pool or something, and I want to back mine up? And so I said, well, I think the company that backs them up, that's a really good company, may only have a small amount of people that are necessary to get their service, like 50 people, and we need a minimum of 50 people. And so 50 people can elect to be on it. And others think that they can just back up their phone on their own, and other people just, I guess, are hoping they don't drop their phone you know what I mean? It's an interesting discussion, and that's why I think you should come next Wednesday.
Yeah, I'll check my schedule. I'll be there.
Listen, and you can see the arguments back and forth, because we can argue. We have gone back and forth on this issue for years on individual rights and technology evolving, and how much you want to limit what people do and treat them with a lot of rules. So
I mean, we talked about this 3 years ago, and one of the ideas we had was, look, you've got an obligation under state law to retain your public records, but is to incentivize it so that, you know, the city would provide BlackBerry devices and certainly could pay for the accessibility, you know, the monthly fees for those, but they would necessarily go through a server, so every message would be captured. And that technology is easy. You just flip a switch. I mean, that's what we had on the state government side. So, but the city administration
rejected
that.
With city government, what they did, though, you know, and I was a part of it, so I know, you could buy your own phone. So then, right. Then all of a sudden, when we just didn't advance far enough with this telecommunication, when you had your own phone, it wasn't a big thing. But when you had a city phone, every phone call you made on that phone was public record. So people could ask, and they did. Request your phone records.
Yeah, because it's just captured through the server.
But if they request my private phone, I have the ability to redact my phone bill for all the personal calls in there. Mm-hmm. So I had that ability before anybody went through it. And this part with them during a meeting, I mean, because you know what time periods it is. You know what day it is. And text messages, emails, whatever, during a meeting. I just think that's as critical as Mr. Denton was of the sheriff's office for not saving their emails and having those be ready for the city council ought to suffer the same consequences of that. This has already been proven. I mean, they proved that they did this. This isn't like some what if. I wonder what if the fire guy texts them during. Well, he did, and they changed the vote. That's crazy.
Kirby has something.
Okay. And I don't know if you had a chance to review the minutes, but at the prior meeting, they discussed and voted against city-issued devices because they like their own personal devices. And many of them said, if I have two devices, it's going to sit at home, or it's going to sit in my car, and I'm not going to use it, and it's not a good use of taxpayer money, or I don't want to be juggling this one and accidentally send a personal text from my city email or my city phone or whatever it is. So that was considered by the council, and the recommendation was against it.
I thought having to make a joke, but probably not appropriate.
What happens in the new year if the city council president delays or doesn't make a new policy? Is the old policy still in effect? Is that what the plan is?
Well, that's interesting. You know, the policy, I guess, of the prior president would stay in effect.
Okay.
They'll have to work that out when they do the resolution. And I think that's a good point. We'll make that recommendation when they
draft
it.
You know where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We wouldn't want there to be a gap, whether it's intentional or unintentional.
The old one stays in place, just like Ethics Commission members, until a new one gets appointed, you have to stay on. In fact, that might work for you.
I see.
That might work
for you. I have to find my replacement?
Yes.
I see. Okay. With my ample time.
How often are the text messages of city councilmen requested? I'm just curious.
I usually hear about it if there's a public records request that comes in. Not often.
I can see a group just saying, I want to have all my team members city text messages regarding city business.
And they have.
It used to be a standing request sometimes for email. depending on who you were and what position you held, sometimes union would have a standing request. I want the emails for so-and-so every month.
Well, you know, it's interesting because under Sunshine Law, you can't have standing requests for future documents. You have to request them after
they
are
handed. They would do it every time.
Yeah. It's interesting just to see their reaction. I'm telling you, the meetings have been very interesting. I was sorry that Kirby and I couldn't make the one. In fact, we may even get the transcript of it and listen to it because what came up at that meeting, and I hear it got a little controversial. I was trying to find out today what happened. It's like, well, this only happened because we weren't trained correctly. And so...
and there y'all are. There's our trainers.
Yeah, and actually, the public records in the Sunshine was done by General Counsel's office.
Not sure. Oh.
And they found, they actually went through all the training of last June, and they found the exact training on the text messages and the public records and stuff like that. That specifically, but the problem with that, and so there was a thing like, if only I had known, if only you had trained me. See, that kind of theme, and I'm thinking, really, we're going to go there? But you have to take responsibility as a trainer. If you have like 10 important things to get across to people, they were being trained 2 days in a row as brand new people, like where the bathroom is, where their ID tag is, their health insurance, here's an ex parte hearing, a quasi-judicial, here's how you vote on the budget. By the way, here's like 50 rules on ethics and tech. You sit through things like that for 2 days and then you have to apply it 6 months later. How many of you would do that 100%? And that's the responsibility of people who train to make sure that you drill them and you follow it up and you...
But isn't that part about having sufficient punishment on the other end supposed to make you comply with these things?
If you understand it. And that's why all those offenses that Samantha showed us, they find out it's unintentional and the people didn't know and they're sorry. You know, some people get it faster than others. And usually in corporate America, if you make a mistake, like if you don't get the policy and you make a mistake, they call you in and they say, "Did you get it in the training?" And they give you a chance. Here it's front page news, and it has the word ethics branded on it so that the elected official now has a tag on them that they were in some kind of ethics trouble. And a lot of the text messages that went on during that meeting were clearly not a violation of the Sunshine Law. They were not. You know, some were questionable and are still the subject matter of a lawsuit. But some were just, okay, you get a text message in from a lobbyist and you say, thank you. That's not a violation of the Sunshine Law, you know, but the people were, you know, like it got to be just a flurry of activity. And then the result is that ethics... takes a hit on that. It did not endear the group to ethics. And we have to figure out a better solution than what happened. And I think it is part of training. And it's part of people taking responsibility that they just, you know, got glazed looks after 2 days of being, they call it the fire hose effect. Here's 1,000 facts. Good luck. And I don't think that's fair to do to people. And then if they make a mistake, they're on the front page of the paper. It just isn't, you know, anyhow.
I don't think that's fair either, but I mean, now they have the opportunity to correct that. They're sitting there. They're the ones that's going to make the policy, mm-hmm. and they're refusing to do it.
Good point.
I mean, they got a gimme. That first one was a gimme. Now fix it.
I want you to speak next Wednesday.
All right, we'll tune in for you, John. Okay, I think we're on the home stretch here. We've got a joint meeting with the True Commission next month, which is great because I'm still not sure I know what the True Commission does, so look forward to hanging out with them and learning more. And any public comments? Yeah, please.
Conrad Markle, Concerned Taxpayers of Duval County. pretty well known, I think, to most of the members of the Ethics Commission after 6.5 years of working alongside Ms. Miller, helping to instate this wonderful document that we were without for 37 years and the ensuing ordinances to leading to enforcement. But I just had a couple of things I wanted to hit. One thing, the texting thing you were just discussing, we have the lawsuit against seven of the city council members who were involved in that TextGate situation last fall when Randy Wise, the, I guess, president of the firefighters, inveigled them into a web of what amounted to vote rigging as far as we were concerned. So we sued, and we sued seven of them that I don't remember the exact particulars, but it was like they were the ones who protested, and then they began to back down after we sent the papers and began the lawsuit on the seven. We're now down to three and possibly two that are still holding out. One just settled for made a settlement in the last couple of weeks. One was really interesting. It got all the way down to this point, and Doyle Carter, who's the nominee for the vice presidency of the council this year, went all the way to a deposition, as I understand it, for them to figure out that what he did that night had nothing to do with the vote. It was just a total, why he hadn't picked up on that with the arguments we were getting out of all the rest of them that were protesting. Anyway, it was like, I guess, an automatic clearing, so on. But there was a question that came up at concerned taxpayers last time that I told them I would mention it involving a sunshine law situation. I remember 4 years ago, right after we had finally gotten the ethics code and ordinances into action and the deal with the mayor's office straightened out about, and Ms. Miller with a budget to run this thing in April, I naively brought up the fact that I had been trying to find a couple of years of minutes and there weren't any to be found anywhere. And Mr. Gillum was the chair at the time and he was suddenly livid because it's like, we can't have this embarrassment. We're the ones that have pushed all this through. And now we have no minutes on file for like 2 years back. So there was a big flurry to bring the minutes up to date. But it was mentioned Tuesday night that I get these acronyms mixed up. We have so many of them floating around now, these acronym agencies. But I believe it's the DIA, and I don't know. I don't think we have a DEA right now. Okay. DIA apparently is in that situation where somebody went to, out of curiosity, went to pull up their minutes and see where this, especially like the corporate welfare that we protest so much, where all this is going. And it's either last August or a year ago last August is the last minutes that show up. And I don't know whether that merits me filling out a written ethics complaint or whether that's why I thought I would just bring it in here and I told them I would mention it because of it being a sunshine law violation of a parallel agency. I don't know what you want to do with it, but
well, here to Mr. Merkel. First of all, the Ethics Commission doesn't have jurisdiction over sunshine law. It's the state attorney's office or the attorney general. It's not us. We can't enforce that. But I can tell you, I know about the DIA situation and their minutes. They're behind in about two or three meetings on getting their minutes up to date, and I told them to get them up to date today. So they should have them. And they should have them quicker than they have had in the past. They have, when a citizen requests the minutes, they say, oh, well, here's the tape of, you know, you go through and listen to the whole tape. And that doesn't comply with the law. It has to be in minutes. Do you know what I mean? You have to give minutes to people. So they'll, I'm sure, be getting those quickly. There is no requirement under the law that they post them on the internet. It's a nice thing to do. We do it with the Ethics Commission. And when you were talking a couple of years ago with Braxton Gillum and stuff, we had the minutes because they're always done within a week. They hadn't been posted to the internet because we had a problem getting them to the internet. That's not a requirement under the law. So the problem with the DIA should be solved within a week. And I don't think it will be repeated. So it's good if you know of something like that to let my office know, and then we can, you know, jump on it and clear people up that handing out a transcript of the entire meeting is not sufficient. And then they go, oh, okay, and then they rush to get all the minutes, which is what they're doing.
That's why I thought this would be the low-key way to bring it up.
Yeah, good.
So it's in the public eye. The other thing, I wanted to make a brief comment on a copy of Frank Denton's editorial in yesterday's paper about the enigmatic resignation of Mr. Klein so suddenly after the great expectations we've had for him. And I have looked at the, he cites in there this recent report that they turned out, and then his sudden resignation with this evaluation that was, he was on the heels of it when this report came out. And when you look at that report, I don't know whether it's whoever compiled it or where the problem is, but they apparently expected people to understand that they cited 100 cases that were actually, I guess, put into writing or whatever of complaints. They stipulate complaints. But out of 100, they've got a pie chart showing the different areas of city government that were involved. And, of course, the most egregious department, the one with the preponderance of complaints, was municipal code compliance. No surprise anybody that's ever had to deal with them. But what's odd is that they have 20 out of the 100, which is, it rounds off to 20%. But they only have, on the next pie chart, they only show 6 that were addressed. If I read the pie chart correctly, that's why I wonder how these things are laid out. But it shows that they all were referred to other agencies. So apparently out of 20 complaints involving the Department of Municipal Code Compliance, nothing was addressed, including one that I brought up last year that Ms. Miller is aware of, which was the federal HUD investigation that came in here, and it was on the front page of the B section of the Times Union on, I believe, June the 12th of 2014, about the investigation of Kim Scott and allegations of malfeasance over the way funding that had been flowing in here for years from federal HUD was being used when they were tearing down some of these houses, especially in Springfield and in other historical situations or of historical value, where they were not making any effort at all in some cases to ascertain that. But it's an example of what Denton is talking about in his article, if you read it in yesterday's paper, about the questions now that are raised after only 6 months of this very, very well-intended office being implemented. When we came out of the JCCI study in 2008 and 2009 on the city finances and the pensions and the public trust, the three legs of the public trust were seen to be the existing Tree Commission, the Ethics Commission that we were trying to bring up from Ms. Miller and her part-time riding herd on something that had been removed from any kind of legal document 37 years before, 35 years, I guess, at that time. But it was supposed to work. It was supposed to be the Tree Commission, the Ethics Commission, and the IG, which they had the fledgling IG under the mayor's office. And we came out 2 years later with the Ethics Commission sailing through, which it was really great. The Tree Commission is already in place. And they removed the IG. And so we spent 4 more years waiting for this thing with Mr. Klein last year. And now 6 months later, he mysteriously resigns and you know, everything is guesswork as far as what his real motivation was. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Merkel. Yeah, I know that can be a little frustrating in terms of the guesswork, but maybe in terms of the process going forward, we'll definitely get it where it should be. So, all right, any other comments? Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.